Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to EMS Live. This program is recorded.
Good morning and welcome to EMS Live in Wisconsin. It is Tuesday, January 23rd, and we have two wonderful guests lined up for you today. Our first guest will be Dr. Suzanne Martin, State of Wisconsin EMS Medical Director, talking about her and the Physician Advisory Committee's initiatives and goals for the coming year, as well as any changes we might want to anticipate coming from the state office and from the PAC this year. And our second guest will be Joe Kahelski from Wisconsin Statewide Health Information Network, talking about a new use case for EMS. Today's program will run about 30 minutes, and we will be back after this short message from one of our sponsors.
Zoll Medical Corporation, a leader in medical devices and integrated software solutions, helps first responders manage, treat, and save lives while also increasing operational efficiency. Zoll offers innovative products for circulation, defibrillation, temperature management, ventilation, and data management that strengthen the chain of survival and improve outcomes. For more information, contact EMS Territory Manager Dan Brain at 262-312-8868, Territory Sales Manager for Data Management Scott Borchardt at 303-801-0000, or Tito Espiritu, Territory Sales Manager for Ventilation, at 386-295-1997, or visit Zoll.com.
Okay, welcome back to EMS Live in Wisconsin. I'd like to welcome to the show Dr. Suzanne Martin, State of Wisconsin EMS Medical Director. Good morning, Dr. Martins. How are you?
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So you are here to talk about some of the 2018 initiatives from your seat as the Wisconsin Medical Director, as well as the Physician Advisory Committee as a whole.
Yes. We are looking forward to new things coming up. We've done some reorganization over the past year or so as far as some of our processes. We used to put things forward kind of just as they came to us, and between the EMS board and the EMS section, we've tried to organize it a little bit more so we can have a kind of an altogether bigger release. So hopefully in the future, pretty much every January will be a reliable update on the reference documents that are posted on the website. So some of the things that I will bring you today are already available. The combined scopes document, I believe, has been updated to reflect some of our new definitions, and an updated paramedic-based medication list will be joining that shortly. So we will have some information on that.
Excellent. So talk about some of the updates or some of the changes that went into the updated combined scope.
Okay, so a couple of things that we recognized is that we are keeping an eye on basically national expectations. So the national education curriculum, the national scope of practice, and some of the recommendations. Although it's been widely recognized that Wisconsin's actually kind of ahead of the curve on this, we perform advanced skills and scopes that other areas are now considering to be important. So a few things that we looked at was changing slight definitions on the difference between an advanced skilled and an optional skill. So starting at the EMR level, we recognize that there's more and more expectations of not only emergency medical responders, but what we call immediate responders. So on the first aid level, things like hemorrhage control is being heavily emphasized across the nation. So we wanted to recognize that our EMRs are already able to perform some of these things, but we wanted to remove any barriers that they thought that there were restrictions on this. So we do encourage the EMRs to work on their advanced skills as far as bleeding control with tourniquets, wound packing, hemostatic agents, things like that. The other thing that we recognize as being taught at the first aid level was some assisted medications, including having bystanders being able to assist people, say, with their meter dose inhalers. So that also flows up to the EMT level, where we wanted to emphasize the expectations that people performing as EMTs should really know how to assist people with these medications. So the emphasis on this was, again, with the meter dose inhaler. Obviously, everyone should know how to assist with an epinephrine auto-injector, because that's quite important. And then simple medications such as nitroglycerin. The other thing is that, of course, with the expanded use of naloxone, we wanted to make sure that all were emphasized on being able to administer this via the nasal route. And again, this is not something new to Wisconsin. However, the rest of the nation is recognizing this as being much more important. So those are some of the things at the EMR and EMT level. some other expansions that we've looked at more pointedly towards the paramedic level is some hazardous materials considerations or special scenes considerations, and a couple of medications that had fallen off of our list that are now back on is with regards to tetracaine and proparacaine, especially for eye injuries, be they chemical exposures or mechanical injuries. The expanded use of calcium gluconate as an antidote for especially industrial exposures to hydrofluoric acid. So some places have been using this for a while, but we wanted to make sure that the additional use, because the calcium gluconate also comes as a gel that can be applied topically, as well as can be aerosolized if there's an inhalational injury. Other things that we renamed were the components of the cyanide antidote kit, in addition to the hydroxycobalamin, which is the newer cyanide antidote kit. People who work in advanced hazmat life support have recognized that some of the components in the older cyanide kit were still around and were used as an industrial antidote. So they had previously been removed, but we replaced them on the list just so they could be recognized. Other things more, other things more functional for some of the paramedic agencies is approval of tranexamic acid as an accepted field medication. There were some agencies already opting to put this into their operational plan, and when we did review it at the Physician Advisory Committee, we agreed that this is a acceptable EMS field medication, and it is being more widely used. It is recommended that if this is a consideration, it be worked into the trauma system in the area. This is one of the points that we've been emphasizing, is making sure that your regional resources are kind of all in the same plan. This applies to mass casualty incidents, trauma, STEMI, stroke. We're seeing much more of a push of using shared regional resources and making sure that EMS is embedded into the entire plan of moving a patient, especially if we have to go from area to area. In accordance with that, we did review the proposed stroke guidelines, especially the interfacility stroke guidelines, which includes medications that may need to be used for blood pressure control, including those of labetalol and nicardipine. Those are the two most commonly referenced by the neurology and neurosurgery receiving facilities, so we wanted to make sure that they were acceptable for paramedic use. And finally, one thing that we did add at the paramedic level is we expanded the choice of vasopressors. So traditionally, most ambulances would stock dopamine, and we recognized that epinephrine is available pretty much everywhere. So if you need to mix and use an epinephrine drip, you should probably know how to do that. However, with the expanding recognition of the importance of sepsis and having to move and treat more patients with sepsis, the choice of norepinephrine has become much more significant. So that was added to the standard list, as well with recognizing that vasopressin has always kind of been around but may have not been used as much. And then finally, we had a few discussions on the use of phenylephrine. And if people aren't knowledgeable on using phenylephrine, it's a unique vasopressor that has less tachycardia side effects.
Sorry about that.
Has some specific applications. So we've expanded the choice of vasopressors at the paramedic level, and hopefully people will be able to take a look at that and see if that's something that their agencies might wish to employ. So I think that's the list of medications and scope changes that are going to be applicable and should be posted on the website soon. I know the scopes document is up. The medication changes should be done shortly.
Excellent. Well, thanks for that robust update, Dr. Martins. It sounds like you and the pack as a whole are really working to make things easier and allow for progress in the state of Wisconsin, not only for paramedic units, but also down to the EMR and EMT level by cleaning up the language and removing some of those barriers or perceived barriers, and really making for easier communication and understanding of what is available to them and what can be available to them and under what circumstances.
And
do we,
and
you said, sure. Go ahead.
I was going to say, one thing that was recognized throughout the rest of the nation when there was the concern over the expense of the epinephrine auto-injectors, and there's currently a nationwide debate about who can give manually drawn up epinephrine injections. Currently, most other states restrict this to the EMT level, perhaps the advanced EMT level. I believe that Wisconsin is the only state that has advanced this to the EMR level. And at a national level, I've been reporting back to them about our training program, our expanded use, and we're watching it very closely for any signs of safety issues either with providers or with patients. So just one area that, again, Wisconsin's kind of ahead of the curve.
Excellent. And just to circle back a little bit to the Narcan discussion with allowing all levels to do that at the with the intranasal, I also noticed a change in language in the documents you had sent previous to the show, and kind of changing that verbiage from Narcan specifically to the opiate antagonist.
Right, and that's in anticipation in case we do run into some medication shortages. The national language has been to just call it an opioid antagonist in case we would have to change brands or names, depending on not only the supply, but in case there is a new discovery of a better acting antidote that would be more advantageous. So we try not to lock things into a certain name or brand name, and hopefully that will make transitions more fluid and easy.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for all of your work and for all of the work of PAC and the initiative. And I think this is going to go really well. It's going to be a great 2018 for EMS in Wisconsin.
Yes, and I would encourage anyone who's looking for projects to do, the EMS website does have the 2018-2020 EMS plan as a reference document, and it has a lot of points of areas for improvement, and people can choose to start their own programs if they wish.
Excellent. Now, Dr. Martins, one last question. If people have questions about the resource documents on the website, they have questions for PAC, is there a way that they can get in touch with PAC? Are they allowed to go to the meetings? Can they ask questions of you? And how would they do that?
Yes, board meetings, PAC meetings are open. They are also broadcast, so you can watch them live. Otherwise, on the EMS website, there's contact information for not only myself and the entire EMS section, but also for the PAC members. So they do have contact information, especially emails listed, and are available to help sort or field questions. And again, we consider PAC members to be one of those regional resources that should be taken advantage of. So if you've got a PAC member in your area, please get to know them.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Dr. Martins. I really appreciate it. And I know this will be good information for all of our listeners.
Okay. And hope this year goes well for all of us.
We'll hear another short message from one of our sponsors, Savick Buying Group, and we will be back with Joe Kahelski from the Wisconsin Statewide Health Information Network.
Since 1997, Savick Buying Group has been saving members money through world-class buying power in the public safety sector. Hello, this is Savick Executive Director Mickey Schulte. With over 4,500 Savick members throughout North America and strong commitments from our vendor partners, we turn this buying power into products and services at the industry's best prices with agreements from Henry Schein, Zoll Medical, Granger, and many other companies. To receive more information or get started today, contact the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin at 414-236-4192 and mention you would like to be a Savick member, or go online to paw.us/Savick, S-A-V-V-I-K. Best of all, PAW pays your annual Savick member fee so you can access millions of products discounted and get real savings absolutely free. Make the call, 414-236-4192, and join Savick today.
Welcome back to EMS Live in Wisconsin. We are in the second half of our program this morning, and I'd like to welcome to the show Joe Kahelski, the Chief Executive Officer for Wisconsin Statewide Health Information Network, or WISHIN. Welcome to the show, Joe.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to learning more about WISHIN and this new opportunity you have for EMS.
Well, thank you. Maybe makes sense to spend a few minutes talking about WISHIN in general for those who aren't aware of who we are and what we do. The Wisconsin Statewide Health Information Network, WISHIN, is a not-for-profit organization. We're about 7 years old. We are the state's designated entity for health information exchange, and our main service is something we call WISHIN Pulse, which is a community health record. And a community health record is pretty much what it sounds like. It's a way for clinical information about a patient to be brought together in one place and able to be queried by those who are part of the network. So any given patient's clinical history could be accessible, and of course, there's value in that in the context of clinical decision making, care coordination, and certainly when if potentially a patient isn't even in a position to tell the person who's taking care of them what might be going on. So the idea of having the ability to see recent test results and other things and other clinical information that could be very relevant to the care that's being delivered to a patient, has a lot of value. And we've been growing quite a bit since we were founded about 7 years ago. We now have an almost statewide reach. We have about 1,500 sites of care around the state that are part of our network. That means they are either already contributing or are contracted to contribute, you know, clinical data from their electronic health record systems. And we have clinical information, to some extent anyway, of for about 5.3 million unique patients. So it's not everybody in the state. Certainly some of those folks are not Wisconsin residents, and some of them are no longer with us. But we have a lot of clinical information available. And certainly we think that, in general, that information is useful to anybody who is delivering care, including, of course, EMS folks. But that's not the new news. That's, you know, our service has been available to those who are delivering care, you know, since we've really started. The new news is that we now have approval from our participant advisory board and our board of directors to allow this information to be used in the context of payment, for payment purposes. And we think there's a lot of use for the EMS community with this use case because we are aware that there's some administrative difficulty often in kind of tracking down the information that is needed to bill for services. And I have to give credit to Patrick Ryan from Ryan Brothers, who was a good sounding board for us as we were kind of putting this use case together. And so now it is possible for EMS entities or the folks who work for them to use the Wish and Pulse system to track down face sheet information. That's a standard part of the community health record. And expedite the billing process, helps on cash flow, et cetera. And so we're really excited about this opportunity, the new use case for the information that we make available.
This is all very exciting, Joe. So a couple of questions for you. How, as a caregiver or as someone in EMS looking for the face sheet information for billing purposes, how do you access this system?
Well, really, it's pretty simple. It can be accessed as a standalone portal, essentially a website with a user ID and password, and then, you know, you search on the patient name. And you don't necessarily have to know where they've been treated in the past. And we have pretty sophisticated patient matching algorithms that, you know, allow us to find the right patient, and the context, you know, will be pretty evident in terms of, you know, finding the right patient. So that's one way the information can be accessed, just like any, you know, sort of standard website. The other way that our users access our system is through a single sign-on integration. And what that means really is that we've kind of embedded the tool in the systems that they otherwise use to access, you know, their own healthcare information about the patient. In the case of a hospital or a clinic, that would be, you know, an electronic health record system. And we've done integrations for several of our clients where, you know, they have the information about the patient, you know, that they own or they have access to, you know, up on the screen within their own EHR. And in the background, then we are querying the Wishin system. So we're passing the user credentials and the patient context through to the Wishin system in the background. And then it's just a matter of clicking. It's just basically clicking, pushing a button or a tab and jumping over right into the community health record about that patient. So, again, that's visibility into clinical history that, you know, is beyond the organization's sort of virtual four walls and provides a lot more of clinical context to the treatment decisions and the care coordination that they're doing.
Absolutely. I mean, we're kind of in an interesting predicament in pre-hospital care and emergency care where oftentimes you have limited information and you need to make significant decisions. So any way that we can get more information, more accurate information is always going to be of benefit to that patient's overall care.
Absolutely. I mean, the emergency situation is a classic use case for health information exchange for obvious reasons.
So as an ambulance service, how do I set up access for my billing department or for my is it, and ideally, when you guys set this up, is it something that the field crews access to fill out their report or something that they would access in the front office or at the billing level to go back and fill in the blank, so to speak, to help with getting the claims processed and bills out there and that type of thing?
Yeah, I think the answers to those questions are going to vary by, you know, the organization, the entity that we're talking about. But in general, you know, an organization that wants to participate in WISH and would execute a participation agreement with us, and, you know, every organization that is part of WISH and signs a participation agreement, they're the same agreement that everybody signs, and it's a long legal document, but it boils down to what are the permitted uses and the permitted users of the data. Obviously, we're dealing with health information, and, you know, there are restrictions around how that can be used and who can use it. But basically, you execute the agreement, and we can turn on access to the system almost immediately. We just need to do a little bit of training. It's not complicated. And to the extent that an organization is, you know, using an outside entity to do their billing, then we'd have to have them, you know, as a party to the agreement and, you know, make sure that, you know, the paper trail is there in terms of who's touching the data and why. But it's generally a pretty simple process.
And they can find all of that information on your website, I imagine.
There's a lot of information on our website. We're happy to talk to folks in more detail about their specific situation. Our phone number is on the website. It's wishin.org. There's also a link for an email contact. Very simple, wishin@wishin.org is our general mailbox. We're always happy to talk to folks. We can do demonstrations of the system. If they'd like us to do that, we can do that remotely, or we can go on site and kind of walk them through it. We're happy to do that, and we really think that this is an area for growth for us because the value is potentially so great.
Yeah, I anticipate you're going to be getting quite a few calls and quite a few emails for more information, and this is something, your website, the phone number, that information is definitely something that will link to our website. And I know Paw had sent out some information on this a little bit earlier in the year as well, so we'll make sure to link back to that kind of one-page sheet as well.
Thank you. We appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Is there anything else that you'd like to share about the WISH and Pulse or the new use case for EMS?
Well, again, I think there's a lot of value for the folks who listen to this podcast. And, I mean, there's value in general. If you step back and think about this, this is about doing right by patients. It's making sure that we're delivering the best possible care and have the most possible information available in the context of making those decisions. So, you know, we really believe in what we're doing. This is good for patients, and, you know, we're happy to find new avenues to in new sort of market segments that are going to be able to take advantage of this information. I will also mention that we are going to be at the upcoming WEMSA conference coming up in a few days, as we're speaking on Tuesday the 23rd. So would love to chat personally with folks who might be listening and also at that conference.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Joe. And again, thank you to Dr. Martins for her time today. We really appreciate all of the information. And again, look to our webpage for additional information and show notes. And stop out and visit Joe and his group at WEMSA. Thank you for listening.
Thank you.